Okay, good morning. So nice to see you all. This Shabbat, of course, is Shabbat Bishalach. It's also known as Shabbat Shira, as we read the Shirat Hayam, the song at the sea. And there's a beautiful custom to feed birds on Shabbat Shira. And as we'll see in a moment, there are a number of reasons given for this custom. Some connected to the theme of the man in the parsha, the manna. Others explain that it's related to the Shirat Hayam, the song at the sea itself. But the underlying question is it even permitted to feed birds or wild birds on Shabbat? And so this morning, I'd like to explore together with you what happens when a minhag develops and proliferates, which appears to be in conflict with normative halacha, which appears to contradict or be in contradistinction with halacha psuka, halacha mikubelet, normative halacha. What happens when a minhag crystallizes and becomes popular and it seems to fly in the face of what we know to be normative halacha? So let's take a look together at a number of fascinating sources. Put some sources up here on the screen. Okay, first we'll explore some of the ta'amim, or the reasons given for this custom. Now, if you ask any child, any school child, if you ask my children why there's such a minhag to feed birds on Shabbat Shira, they'll tell you, oh, because the Midrash says that Hashem and Moshe tells the Jewish people the man is not going to fall on Shabbat. There's going to be a double portion that's going to fall on Friday, on Erev Shabbat. And the Jewish people are supposed to glean a double portion on Erev Shabbat. That's, of course, why we have Lechem Mishneh, why we have a double portion or double loaves of challah on our Shabbat table as a zecher for the man. So any child will tell you, so the Torah says there's not going to be any man that's going to fall on Shabbat. But there were these two bad guys, Datan and Aviram, these villains that over and over again are making trouble for the Jewish people, making trouble for Moshe Rabbeinu, and they want to try and prove Moshe wrong, and they want to try and prove the Torah wrong. And what do? They, of course, on Shabbos morning, wake up before everyone else, and they take some of their leftover man, and they scatter it around all over the Midbar, and then they go back to the encampment, and they tell the nation, look, Moshe was wrong. Moshe was lying to us. Here, man has fallen on Shabbos morning. And then, according to this Midrash, by the time the Jewish people get out of their beds and go and look, the birds have come and eaten up all of the man and foiled the plans of Datan and Aviram. And so, in order to reward the birds, oh, we spread out on Shabbos Shira, on Shabbat Shira, we want to reward the birds, so we give them some food. Give them some food for foiling the plans of Datan and Aviram and proving Moshe true and the Torah true. Okay, so that is a famous Midrash. There's only one problem. It actually does not appear in the Midrash. I could give a whole class about Midrashim that are not actually in the Midrashic literature, or not actually in at least the Midrashim that we have, you know, the extant Midrashim. But in any case, and actually, in fact, Rav Menachem Mendel Kasher, who is famous for his masterful work, Torah Shlema, where he tries to record all of the Midrashim from not just the published Midrashim, but from manuscript. And he was an expert in Midrashim, of course. This was before computers, before databases, before all of these manuscripts were digitized. He was absolutely brilliant. And he writes that he could not find a source for this. And some of the sources, they say it says in the Yalkut. It says in the Yalkut. The Yalkut may be a reference to the Yalkut Shmoni, although there are a number of different Yalkutim which collect Midrashim. So he says he did not find this Midrash, but the closest Midrash that we have to this Midrash, to this story, this famous story, which we'll see in a moment, appears in the Mechilta. And that's here in source number one. Now, so if you take a look at the Psukim that we'll read, Amir Tzashem, this Shabbat, in Parashat B'Shalach, okay, This is Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuk Chaf Hey. Vayomer Moshe, Ichlu Hayom Ki Shabbat Hayom Lashem. Eat the man today, for today is Shabbos. Today is Shabbat Lashem, Shabbos for God. Hayom Lo Timtso Basadeh. Today you're not going to find any man in the fields. And in fact, Moshe had previously told them to collect a double portion on Erev Shabbat because they're not going to find man on Shabbat. It's not going to fall on Shabbat. And then the Pasuk again reiterates, Sheshet Yamim Til Ketuhu, for 6 days you will gather the man, Uvayom Ashri Shabbat Lo Yebo. But on the 7th day, on Shabbos, there will not be man. There will not be man in the fields. And then the next Pasuk relates, Vayehi Bayom Ashri, and it was on the 7th day, Yatsu Minaham. There were those people who went out into the field. Yatsuminam lilkot. There were those who went out to gather. Vilo matzau. And the Pasuk says they did not find anything. Well, of course they didn't find anything, because Hashem told them there's not going to be man. So the Midrash there, Vilo matzau, they didn't find. The Midrash in the Mechilta says, Elu mechusarei, or mechusarei, amanasha b'Yisrael. This Pasuk that speaks of those who went out into the fields to look and did not find, it's a reference to the chosarei amunah, those of little faith, those who lacked faith, those who didn't trust that they will be provided for on Erev Shabbat, that they'll have enough on Erev Shabbat to sustain them for Shabbat as well. Okay, so that is the closest midrash that we have to this famous story of Datan and Aviram. However, this story of Datan and Aviram appears in a number of places. Here in source number 2, I quoted from, I gave you an excerpt from one of the rich Sfarim, which records Minhagim and really the reasons behind Minhagim, Otsar Kol Minhagei Yisrael. And there it's recorded in the name of this Maaseh Alfis, Sefer Maaseh Alfis, which tells over that famous Midrash in the name of the Yalkut, which, as I said, doesn't appear in the Midrashic literature, or at least the Midrashim that we have. So he writes the following. Nahagusha b'Shabbat Shira, mifazrin rifot. There's a minhag to spread out rifot, whether that means some sort of crumbs or grains, in parentheses as kasha, buckwheat, lifnei ha'ofot, before birds, hatam mishum di'ita b'yalkut ala pasuk. The reason is this midrash in the Yalkut, which, as I said, doesn't really appear in the Yalkut, based on the pasuk, vayi bayom ashvi yatsu min ha'am lilkot v'lo matzau, pasuk that we just read together. Ukasha, it's difficulty. Dehaya lo lichto v'lo aya. It should have said there was not. In other words, it says they went out and they didn't find anything. But really, the pasuk could have been written, or should have been written, they didn't find anything because there was nothing. Ki lo me'olam, right? Which, for this midrash, which is not exactly a midrash, would imply that maybe there was something. Maybe there was something, because it doesn't say, the pasuk doesn't say there was nothing. The pasuk says they didn't find anything, implying that maybe there was indeed something. Ach lefi shedatan v'aviram yatzu b'leil Shabbat michutz la'machane. But what happens? Oh, this famous story that Datan and Aviram, they went out. This version has it Friday night. Okay, Friday night, Shabbos morning, whatever. They went out, michutz lamachane, they went out of the camp. Upizru sham haman, and they spread out there in the fields the manna, shehaya bidehem, that they had in their hands, al pnei hasadeh, on the face of the land, of the fields there. Bamidbar, in the wilderness, kidei lasot dvarav shel Moshe plaster, in order to make Moshe out to be a liar. Sheamar, for Moshe said, shebayom hashvi'i lo yebo. Moshe told them that there is not going to be any man that's going to fall on Shabbat. The amru el ha'am, and Datan and Aviram wanted to stir up trouble, so they went and told the nation, go out and see, shenimtzah man, al pnei hasadeh. Look, man is found on the ground. Man is here in the fields. Man did fall. Oh, al kein yatu min ha'am lilkut v'chipsu v'lo matzah. So therefore, the pasuk says, yeah, there were those who went out. Yatu, maybe it's yatsu. Okay, they went out. Probably should be Yatsu. They went out to glean, to gather, and they searched and did not find. Why? Because the birds had already eaten up all of the man. Oh, so therefore, on Shabbos Shira, we want to reward them. We give them a reward as a remembrance for this, for what they did. Right? Because why? On Shabbos Shira, in Parashat Bishalach, we read the Parashat of the Man. Okay? So, again, interestingly, there are those who explain the Minhag to be related to the Man, and we'll see in a moment, others explain it to be related to the Shira, to the song. Here's a fascinating source. This is from a Sicha that the Rayatz Milubavitch gave in Chicago, the Friedeker Rebbe, the previous Lubavitch Rebbe, and he writes, he relates in the name of the Alter Rebbe Lubavitch about the Maharal. This is a tradition that the Alter Rebbe had related about the Maharal mi Prague. We know that the Alter Rebbe, the first Rebbe of Lubavitch, was a direct descendant of the Maharal mi Prague. So he writes, Tziva Maharal al kol mlamdei dardiki. The Maharal instituted, literally commanded all the school teachers and fathers of children, presumably smaller children, on Shabbos Shira to gather up all the children into the courtyard of the Beis Medrash. And he would say, Hayom hu Shabbat Shira. The Maharal would say, today is Shabbos Shira. And he would instruct the teachers to tell over to the small school children the story of Kriyat Yamsuf, the story of the splitting of the sea. And this is the connection for the Maharal Prague. And he instructed the teachers to tell their students about Kriyat Yam Suf and about Shirat Hayam, the song at the sea, and how the birds, the tziporim, the birds were singing and dancing together with Moshe and Am Yisrael and the men and women when they sang Shirat Hashem. The Gam Siper Ech Sheyaladim Katfu Perot Me'ayilanot Shebiyam Vechilu Et Tziporim. We have all these beautiful midrashim that talk about how there were all sorts of fruits at the Yam Suf and all sorts of treasures, the Bizat Hayam, that the Jewish people were gathering up all the booty, the spoils of war, and all sorts of fruits they were plucking from the Yam Suf. So he says the Maharal instructed the teachers to say, to tell over to the children how the children then, during Kriyat Yam Suf, would take these fruits and they would feed these birds that were singing. And he also instructed to give the children, the Maharal instructed to give the children some grain, some buckwheat. That the children should give and should throw to the birds la'ot zikaron la'perot shebiyam she'eladim haktanim hechilu az letziporim, as a remembrance, as a sign and a remembrance for these perot hayam, how the children fed the birds who were singing together with Am Yisrael these fruits during Yam Suf, during Kriyat Yam Suf, and as a remembrance for that, these kids should give out, should spread out and throw grain for birds as a remembrance for that. Okay, so you see here, according to this source, it's connected with the theme of Shirat Hayam in the Parsha. Okay, and here, another source, Tam Leminhag She'omrim Ha'olam, this is from a Sefer Beit Aharon, which is brought by Sefer Matamim, source number 4. The reason behind the custom, She'omrim Ha'olam, She'b'Shabbat Shira Mefazrim Lifnei Ha'ofot Kasha, the reason that the entire world, so you see, this is a custom that really proliferated, that really crystallized. The reason that on Shabbat Shira they would spread out and feed birds, this buckwheat or grain, kihim dikru ba'alei shir, for birds are called ba'alei shir, masters of song. There's nothing that sings like birds. Birds are singing constantly. Why? Because they exhibit mastery, they rule over the air. And what he's going to explain is that there's a connection between air and song. Okay? The hazemer ba min ha'avir. Song comes from the wind. Song comes from the sky. Song comes from the avir. What does that mean? What does that mean? That birds fly in the sky, in the wind, and somehow they are masters over song, because the root of song is also in the air, in the avir. And then he says, V'chein klei zemer eino menagen ela min avir. Musical instruments. How do musical instruments make their music? He says musical instruments only are able to produce song because of air. Now, simply, okay, maybe it's a reference to woodwinds, right? Or brass instruments which use air, reed instruments, for instance. But it's not just woodwinds or brass or reed instruments that use air or use breath to make their music. But really, if you think about it, any music or any sound travels through the air, right? Even a piano or even a guitar, it produces a vibration. Sound ultimately is a vibration which travels through the air. So what he wants to say is that there's this connection between birds and song. There's this intimate connection. They are considered balei shir. Why? Because they are sholeh on the avir. They are the masters over the air. And music and song is all about air. Okay. V'chein adam sheyesh re'ah gedola yodea nagen. And someone who's got big lungs, he knows how to make music. Whether that means, you know, we're talking about someone who plays the trumpet or something and needs to produce a lot of air in order to be able to blow on his trumpet, or maybe even a singer, right? A lot of great opera singers, the greatest opera singers, they're all, you know, gesunde, healthy, big individuals who have big lungs, as they say. Okay? V'lachein nichtiva hashira ariach al gabei ledena sheyeh avir be'emtza. And then he explains that that's why the Shirat Hayam is written, according to the Gemara, a half brick on top of two bricks with air in the middle, avir be'emtza. It's an expression that you find in the Gemara and the Megillah, and Daf Tet Zayin, for instance, that the Shirat Hayam, where all of the Shirot are Ariach al Gabe Levena, Levena al Gabe Ariach. For those who would like a illustration, here's just a tikkun. I don't know if you could see my camera, but this, of course, is how the Shirat Hayam is written. You have Ariach al Gabe Levena, you have like one half brick on top of two bricks, or one brick on top of two half bricks, whatever the Gemara means, and there is space in between. There's air in between. And that's what he's trying to say. That here, this idea of Shira, this idea of song, requires air. Okay, you see, even the way we write the Shirat Hayam in the Torah, it's Ariach al Gabe Levena, you have air ba'emtza, avir ba'emtza. So he's connecting the practice of feeding birds on Shabbat Shira with this idea of the Shirat Hayam. And others explain that, you know, the whole world is reciting Shira. All of the creations constantly are reciting Shira to Hashem. And Dafkan Shabbat Shira, the birds, here in source number 6, the Sefer HaTodav, Rabbi Eliyahu Kitov, brings a number of reasons why there's this minhag to feed birds on Shabbat Shira. Okay? And he says, Shehen notlot schar shira, Shehen omrot lakodesh baruchu, b'tzifzufan kol yom. That on Shabbat Shira dafka, we are rewarding the birds who chirp and sing their praises to God every single day. Right? There's this idea that the entire world is singing Hashem's praises. Even every blade of grass is speaking Hashem's praises. And each day the birds chirp and they make their music and praise Hashem. And so on that day, on Shabbat Shira, that's a time to recognize that. U'bishasha anu omdin b'parashat Shira shelanu. And at the time when we stand and we read our Parshat Shira, we read our song at the sea, that is a time to recognize the song that the birds produce every single day for Hashem. Right? Anu niskarim b'shiratan shel hatziporim. We invoke, we recall the song of the birds. So the birds are singing and praising Hashem every single day, along with the rest of creation. And when do we recognize them? And when do we give them a little treat on Shabbat Shira? When we are singing Hashem's praises, when we are reading the Shirat Hayam, the song at the sea. Beautiful, beautiful minhagim. There are other reasons that are given. The Chasam Sofer, for example, this is brought in a number of sources. It's found in Tamei Aminagim and other places that, according to the Chasam Sofer, it's not on your source sheets, but just as the Tzinsenet Haman, that little vial, which contains some of the manna, right? We placed a little bit of the man for safekeeping, for perpetuity inside the Aron HaBrit, inside the Ark of the Covenant. That was one of the things that was kept in the Aron HaBrit as a constant reminder of how Hashem provided for Am Yisrael in the Midbar in order to strengthen our faith. Right? So the Chasam Sofer explains similarly today, without the Aron, so we place food out for birds on Shabbat Shira, also to reinforce our emunah. Just as Hashem provided for us in the Midbar, man, which did not require any effort, right? Just it was lechem min hashamayim, it fell from the sky. It was the clearest source that our sustenance comes from Hashem. And it didn't require much effort on our part. So too, explains the Chasam Sofer, the Chasam Sofer, whatever you want to call them, that on Shabbat Shira, we feed the birds. Also, we give them food which doesn't require any effort. They don't have to look around. They don't have to find seeds, worms, whatever. Right? So just as Hashem provided for us with little effort, and we had a constant reminder of that in the Aron HaBrit. So on Shabbat Shira, when we read about the man, which is all about emunah, man is related to the word emunah. It comes from the word emunah, of course. It's a lesson in faith. So we also feed the birds and give them something which does not require any effort on their part. So there are a lot of beautiful reasons for this beautiful minhag. There's only one problem. This minhag seems to be in conflict with normative halacha. Take a look at the Mishnah here. Source number 7. This is a Mishnah from the 24th chapter of Masechet Shabbat. Okay, where the Chachamim, the sages, prohibited us with feeding wild animals because of the labor that is required. That, according to Rashi, at least, the tircha yeteira, the Chachamim didn't want us running around, spending our entire Shabbos feeding wild animals. Now, of course, as we'll see in a moment, if the animal belongs to you, you have an obligation to feed it. In fact, Chazal say you have to feed your animal before you feed yourself. Right, we see that that Rivka, of course, right? She offers the men water, then the camels, but then she feeds the camels, she feeds animals, and then feeds the men. That's the raya for Chazal. You have to feed your animal before you feed yourself. But Chazal didn't want us expending tremendous effort feeding animals. It's one thing to throw some food in front of your own animals. It's another thing to go and, you know, chveis, try to feed all sorts of wild animals. So the Mishnah here, in source number 7, says the following. Ein ofsin et hagamal velo dorsin. You can't fatten a camel or force feed it on Shabbat. Okay, ofsin would be, you know, trying to overfeed it. Dorsin would be literally trying to stuff food in its mouth. And the explanation is that maybe an individual is interested in fattening up his camel in preparation for a long journey. Camels can store food. Camels can store water. Okay, but the Mishnah continues. Aval ma'itim. You're allowed to place food in its mouth. That's the normal way of feeding an animal. You can again pick up some food and put it in the animal's mouth, or put it in front of the animal. Have the animal feed from your hand. Ve'ein mamrim et ha'agalim. Aval malitim. And similarly, you can't force feed a calf on Shabbat, okay? But you can, again, mehalkitim. You can place it in front of the animal. Different explanations what hamra'a is versus halkita, or malitim, rather, excuse me. Umehalkitim latarnigoli. But you can feed chickens. Okay, you can feed chickens. Minotnim mayim lamursan, and you can put water. You can add water to feed to a mixture of avalogovli, but you can't knead it because that's a prohibition of lisha of lush, which is one of the 39 prohibited categories of work on Shabbat. One of the lametet melachot lush. You're not allowed to knead a dough, or kneading is not just kneading a dough like we think of. Kneading a challah or something, but it's introducing liquid into a mixture, okay, into flour, for instance. Okay, so avalogovlin, you can't knead the water. You can add the water, but you can't mix it in. That's what the Mishnah is saying. Okay, now the next part of the Mishnah is significant for our purposes this morning. The einot bimayim lifnei dvorim v'lifnei yonim shebishovach. You can't place water in front of birds, in front of bees, first in front of bees. We're talking about wild bees. And you can't place water in front of doves. The assumption is that they're capable of finding their own water. Okay. And additionally, they don't belong to you. They're not domesticated. Right. Aval notnim lifnei avazin, betarnigolim, lifnei yonei hardisiot. Talk about that word in a moment. But you can place water or food in front of geese, in front of chickens, and in front of these other type of pigeons or doves, which are called yonei hardesiot. There are different girsaot on how that word should be read, what that word actually is. Some say that it refers to Herodian doves, which could have been a variety of dove, perhaps a dove that King Herod kept. Maybe he had a hobby. He kept birds, right? So it could be that it's a type of Herodian dove. Rashi on the Gemara explains that, maybe it's actually a type of place. And some want to say that it's actually perhaps a reference to roads. But in any case, whatever it is, there's a distinction between non-domesticated animals who don't rely on you to feed them, and domesticated animals, where in the Lashon of the Gemara, you are obligated to feed them. And in fact, the Braita on Daf Kuf Nun Hei in the Gemara, the Gemara cites a Braita which gives us a klal. Okay, the Gemara there on Kuf Nun Hei cites a Braita which gives us a klal. The Braita says, Notnim mezonot lifnei kelev. You can place food in front of a dog, but not in front of a pig. Okay, you can feed a dog, but not a pig. Why? The dog is a domesticated animal. The assumption is that you are going to raise that dog. Others explain it doesn't necessarily have to be your dog, but just a dog in general is a type of animal, since it's a domesticated animal that you can feed. It's something that's shchiach that typically a person would feed. However, on Shabbat, you can't feed a pig because the assumption is that Jews aren't raising pigs. Okay, now the Braita asks, "Uma hefresh bein zeh lezeh?" Or actually, the Gemara asks, "Wait, what's the difference between the two things?" And the Gemara explains, "Zeh mezonotav alecha, v'zeh ein mezonotav alecha." As I mentioned before, that one of them you are responsible in feeding. One of those animals depends on you for its sustenance, and the other does not depend on you. Okay, so again, we make a distinction between domestic animals versus wild animals. Although, as I said, It's a machlokes whether the animal has to be yours, or maybe you can feed, a stray dog. Certainly, if it's a hungry dog, many poskim like Derech HaShulchan says you can feed. Okay, if the dog has no other food, because then we say mizonotav alecha, his food is your responsibility. He depends on you to feed it. Okay, but the reason behind all of this and why Chazal prohibited feeding wild animals is because of tircha yetera. according to Rashi. The Chachamim didn't want us expending all this energy feeding animals on Shabbat, animals that don't belong to us. If it belongs to us, if we have a responsibility to feed it, if the animal looks to us for its sustenance, of course, then we feed it. And you have a mitzvah to feed it. But the Chachamim didn't want us running around all day putting out food for wild animals that don't belong to us. Okay? So that's the halacha. And here, if you take a look in source number 8, this is how the Shulchan Aruch paskins. Okay, this is halacha psuka. This is simple. This is halacha mikubelet, normative halacha. You can't place water or food in front of bees, right? Wild bees. Velo lifnei yone shovach, v'yone aliyah, velo lifnei chazir. Different types of doves that live in a dove coat or live on an aliyah. Maybe, you know, people used to raise pigeons on rooftops. Maybe it's a reference to that. V'lo lifnei chazir, and not in front of a pig. Why? Because you are not responsible to feed those animals. Aval notnim lifnei avazin v'tarnegolim v'yonei beitot, but you can feed geese and chickens and house pigeons, v'chen lifnei kelev, and similarly, as the Braita says, in front of a dog, you can place food, you can feed a dog. Why? And this is the key, this is the klal. She mizonotav alecha. Because its food is dependent on you. It looks to you to feed it. You are required to feed it. Okay, mizonotav alecha. It depends on you for its sustenance. You have to feed that animal. So again, we make a distinction between a wild animal and a domesticated animal. So, good. That's the halacha. What's the problem? The problem is, it sounds like this minhag to feed birds, wild birds, birds that are not in your care, on Shabbos Shira, would be a violation of this Isser de Rabbanan, this rabbinic prohibition of feeding animals that don't belong to you on Shabbat, of feeding wild birds on Shabbat. And in fact, the Magen Avraham, here, in his comments to the Shulchan Aruch, he mentions this very custom of feeding birds on Shabbat Shira. And he writes the following. Yesh nogin latek chitin b'Shabbat Shira. There are those who have the minhag to feed birds, to give birds grain on Shabbat Shira, lifnei ha'ofot, ve'eino nachon. And he says it's not proper. This is not a proper minhag. Shaharei ein mizonotan alecha. Because their food is not your responsibility. These are wild birds. Okay, and the Mishnah Berurah here also paskins. The Mishnah Berurah, citing the Magen Avraham, writes, "Yesh nagin litein chitin, sharei ein mizonatan." Take issue with this custom of feeding wild birds on Shabbat Shira, and state that this practice is in violation of the halacha. And this approach you find mentioned by Rav Yaakov Emdin, the Elia Rabbah, the Machatzita Shekel, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, okay, in addition to the Mishnah Berurah that we just saw. Now, the way the Magen Avraham formulates it, it would sound like it's a minhag ta'ut, right, which should not be performed. Rav Yaakov Emdin uses stronger language. He says it's shtut, v'asarhu, v'asurhu. It's rooted in nothing, in stupidity, and it's completely prohibited. So Yaakov Emdin, who we know is not one to mince words, comes out very strongly against this minhag, as it violates normative halacha. Okay. So that's one approach. And we know that sometimes when there is a minhag that seems to go in the face of halacha psuka or halacha mikubelet, if it's a minhag ta'ut or minhag shtut, we have a mitzvah to uproot that minhag, to get rid of it. Okay. Rabbeinu Tam, in his Sefer Yashar, points out that the word minhag is otiot gehenom. It shares the same letters as the word gehenom, hell. Okay, so sometimes we have practices that creep into our tradition which seem to fly in the face of normative halacha, and we have a responsibility to get rid of them. We say it's a minhag ta'ut, a minhag shtut. But there's also another approach. There's an approach that says, no, we can't be so flippant with minhagei Yisrael. Here we have a minhag that was adopted by Klal Yisrael, a minhag that has proliferated over generations, a minhag that has crystallized, and poskim will apply different expressions of Chazal, of Rishonim, minhag Yisrael Torahi. Right? If it's something that Klal Yisrael observe, if it's become a minhag Yisrael, it's like Torah, or minhag Yisrael Kidinhu, it's like din, it's like halacha. It's become crystallized. They bring the famous statement of Chazal, Hishiru b'minhag avoteichem b'yadeichem. Be very careful with the minhagim of your fathers, with the customs of your fathers that are in your hands. Okay, and sometimes they invoke the Lashon of the Yerushalmi, which requires more elaboration, but it's beyond the scope of our shiur this morning, that minhag mevatel halacha. Sometimes we find that minhag, what is done in practice, would seem to override halacha. Again, that requires a little more Peirush Rashi and exposition and explanation, but that's beyond the scope of the shiur this morning. But we treat minhagim with tremendous deference. We don't flippantly dismiss them. So this other approach that tries to defend minhagim, even minhagim where poskim point out that are potentially problematic, and we'll see in a moment some sources that will defend this minhag of feeding birds on Shabbat Shira. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a theme in his tshuvot where he will often defend minhag Yisrael, even a seemingly problematic minhag, by saying Yisrael im lo nevi'im heim b'nei nevi'im heim, invoking this famous expression that the Jewish people, if they are not prophets, but they are the children of prophets. They are the descendants of prophets. In other words, it's not just stam that Jewish people are observing a certain custom. Right? You can't just dismiss it flippantly. That's the shaila. That's the shaila here. So if you take a look at source number 11, the Aruch HaShulchan, he defends the minhag. And Kidarko Bakodesh, you know, the Aruch HaShulchan was a rav, was a posek, didn't just spend his time in the base medrash, in the Dalet Amos of the base medrash, cloistered off from the world, but no, he was the rav of a community, and a lot of times he's mekil on inyanim and demonstrates or exhibits a lot of lomdus, whereas the Mishnah Brura, which subsequently maybe becomes more popular than the Aruch HaShulchan, especially after World War II. There's a lot to be said about that, but the Mishnah Brura is a collection of sources and opinions of the Achronim on an issue, but actually struggles with an issue, and there's oftentimes a lot of lumdus, a lot of learning in the approach of the Aruch HaShulchan, in the statements of the Aruch HaShulchan. And the Aruch HaShulchan writes the following here in source number 11. Yesh mitra'amin al ma sheminhag b'Shabbat Shira lizrok chitim lifnei ha'ofot. V'harei ein mezonot an alecha. He says, there are those who scream and protest about this custom of feeding birds on Shabbat Shira, of spreading out grain in front of birds. V'harei ein mezonot an alecha. You are not responsible for their food, and therefore the Chachamim prohibited you from feeding them. Aval nir ali, but the Aruch HaShulchan says, but it appears to me, d'minhag Yisrael Torah. Oh, he invokes this expression that minhag Yisrael is like Torah. Something is proliferated. We can't just dismiss it flippantly. Minhag Yisrael, ein anu torchim bishvilam, ela bishvilenu. And he makes a very good point. This is a real lumdish point. He says, what did the Chachamim Aser? What did the sages prohibit? The sages prohibited tircha yetera. They prohibited us from feeding these wild animals that are not in our care. Why? Because it's a tircha. We are strenuously exerting effort for those animals, which is not proper for Shabbos. The Chachamim didn't want us to spend all Shabbos. It's for us. It's bishvilenu. This custom to spread out the food for the birds, it's not really for them. You're not feeding wild animals. You're not exhibiting effort for them. But You're doing it for yourself in fulfillment of this beautiful minhag. And therefore, explains the Aruch HaShulchan, it's mutter, it's permitted. Because it's not what the Chachamim asked. The Chachamim asked you exerting effort for animals. Well, you're not doing it for animals. Explains the Aruch HaShulchan, you're doing it for yourself. Okay, so that's the Aruch HaShulchan. The Tzitz Eliezer here, he is also lenient and defends the custom of is the reason behind this gzeira. What is the reason behind this enactment or prohibition? The Tzitz Eliezer, he says, go out and look in the language of Chazal, puk chazei maya madvar. Go out and look, go into the street and see what the minhag Yisrael. If it's, we can't just flippantly dismiss it. We can't just say it's usur, because that would be motzi laz ala kadmonim, which is a theme that you find in many poskim. You're casting aspersions on previous generations of Yireim Ushleimim, of holy Jews. Right? And so the Tzitz Eliezer says the following. Okay. He writes, Kachu min hagan shel Yisrael. This is minhag Yisrael. This is a Jewish custom that has been universally accepted. V'zichroni miminhag ze mialdutai. I remember this minhag from my youth. V'nagu kacha bevatim shel talmidei chachamim. And great Torah scholars followed this custom, they followed this practice, they observed this practice, they fed birds on Shabbos, on Shabbat Shira. Yireim Ushleimim, right? Holy Yidden, complete in their faith, fearful of God. Be'en putzapo mifapek, and they had no problem with it, no lumdus, right? Without any issue. And there is no place to go and to protest this and to scream about it. The custom of Israel is like Torah. It's likened to Torah. If this is a minhag that has proliferated, that's universally observed. Now, the Tzitz Eliezer, a fascinating individual. He was Nifter in 2006. Great posek here, real Yerushalmi. He was the posek for many years in Shari Tzedek Hospital. We've mentioned him before in these shira many times. He wrote thousands and thousands of tshuvot. So the Tzitz Eliezer was born in Yerushalayim in 1915. So he's a real Yerushalmi. He belonged to the old yeshuv, right? He saw in Yerushalayim the Prushim, the Talmidei Hagra. He grew up with Yireim Ushleimim, Talmidei Chachamim. And what he says here in this tshuva is he saw holy Yidden that belonged to the old yeshuv, perhaps Talmidei Hagra, Prushim, real Yerushalmim, observe this custom without any concern whatsoever. People that were certainly familiar with the Mishnah in the 24th Perek of Masechet Shabbat. People that were certainly familiar with the Gemara in Shabbat and Daf Kuf Nun Hey, and the Shulchan Aruch here, and the Magen Avram that we saw. Okay. So there are two different approaches. And this you find with many minhagim, many examples where you have a minhag that proliferates and is observed either universally by all of Klal Yisrael or by significant portions of Klal Yisrael, by certain communities, where lichora, at first glance, you know, the minhag seems to be somewhat problematic. And there are poskim that are machmir, and there are those who say, oh, it's minhag ta'ut, minhag shtut, and dismiss it. And then you find another approach which says, no, we have to have tremendous deference and reverence for our minhagim. Im lo nevi'im heim, b'nei nevi'im heim. The children of Israel are not prophets, but they are the descendants of prophets. Minhag Yisrael Torahi, Minhag Yisrael Kedinhu. He's here of Minhag Avoteichem B'yateichem. Minhag Mevatel Halacha. And you find that there will be poskim that will defend such a practice. Okay. Now, very simply, there are ways to observe this Minhag you know, without necessarily violating this Isur de Rabbanan. You know, another concern that's raised by some of the poskim is that maybe grain is muksa on Shabbat. If you're a farmer and you're feeding, you know, your animals that belong to you that are in your care on Shabbat, so your grain is obviously not muksa. But, you know, for you and I, if we have grain in the closet that's inedible on Shabbat, we're not allowed to handle that on Shabbat. There's an Isur Tiltul. You can't do anything with grain on Shabbat. So maybe there's an issue of muksa in addition. So the Shmirat Shabbat Kilchita, he here in source number 13 presents another possible option with how to get around all of these concerns which we've seen so far this morning. He says, Lefize lo yafa ele shemefazrim gardirei chitin o shayarei pashtidal tziburim b'shabbat shira. He says, you know, based on what we've mentioned, whether it's muktzah or whether it's the prohibition of feeding wild animals on Shabbat, he says it's not appropriate. Lo yafe. It's not a good practice to feed birds on Shabbos. But he gives you a suggestion of what's permissible. He says you really shouldn't feed them grain, or you shouldn't even feed them, you know, crumbs from your table. But he says ach mutar lina'er mapa min ha'peirurim sha'aleha b'makom sheish bo eruv. Okay, he gives you a good kuntz. In modern Hebrew, we might call it a patent. It gives you a patent in which you can both fulfill this custom of feeding birds on Shabbat Shira, right? But also do it in a way that's, you know, that is in adherence with halacha psuka, halacha mikubelet, with accepted normative practice. He says you can take your tablecloth and shake it out, shake the crumbs, the challah crumbs after benching on your tablecloth, shake it out in a place where there's an eruv. And he says, Hagam shet tzipurim tochlena otam. And the birds will be able to eat your crumbs. So in other words, you can have your cake and eat it too, or your birds can have their cake and eat it too. You can fulfill this minhag in a way that's halachically acceptable. Some say, well, why not just simply feed the birds on Erev Shabbat, right? In fact, I remember, you know, sometimes the kids would come home from school with like little bird feeders. So you're not going to put out a bird feeder on Shabbos. You put out the bird feeder before Shabbos. You put some seeds in it, you put it out before Shabbos. So some say, yeah, like it's not a problem. Just feed the birds before Shabbos. However, the sources that we began with all describe feeding birds dafka on Shabbos itself. So you could argue that maybe the minhag is, no, really to feed the birds on Shabbos itself. So feeding them on Erev Shabbos is not so good. You're not really mekayim the minhag the way it was done if you feed it on Erev Shabbos, because all the sources say you're supposed to feed it on Shabbos, on Shabbat Shira. That's when the custom is supposed to be observed. Okay, so here, the Shmirat Shabbat Kilchita, Rav Neuwirth gives us a kunz, a patent, where you can both fulfill this minhag on Shabbos itself, but in a way that's halachically acceptable, in a way that's appropriate. But others are not mocked. They say, no, you can feed the birds on Erev Shabbat, or it's brought down in the name of the stipler, that the stipler Rav had the minhag to feed the birds on Sunday. Okay, on Sunday. Once you've already read either because it's related to the Parshat Haman or the Shirat Hayam, whatever the reason is, but you've read it on Shabbat, so on Sunday you could feed the birds and be Mekayim the Minhag that way, and that was the Minhag of the stipler. Okay, so there are different ways to observe the Minhag. What's fascinating is I found a Bach that to me is fascinating, where he records the Bach of Yol Sirkis. Now, this is not, no one who's saying this is Mamish, you know, the Bach, one of the major commentaries on the tour, lives in the 16th to 17th century. The Bach lived from 1561 to 1640, right, the major posek. So he records that the minhag was actually to eat grain on Shabbat Shira. Okay, not to feed the birds. This is interesting. He writes, "Lachein yesh mizayel lefi aminhag she'ochlin b'Shabbat Shira chitin shleimin mevushalim." Okay, the custom was on Shabbat Shira to eat grain that was cooked grain. Okay, so in any case, that there is a discussion, by the way, in Hilchot Brachot. He's talking about Brachot. In the middle of the Suda, it's agav, he mentions, as an aside, in a discussion with regards to the brachot that are made on certain things when they're eating, mentions that there was a custom to eat cooked grain on Shabbat Shira. So, for those of you who want to observe this custom, you know, if your custom is to spread out the seed or food for birds on Shabbat itself, Yeshami Lismoch, we saw the Aruch HaShulchan and the Tzitz Eliezer, who are Mekil, there is what to rely on. If you want to be careful, you could follow the practice of the Shmirat Shabbat Kilcheta and toss your tablecloth into the wind for the birds and spread crumbs for them that way. You could feed them on Erev Shabbat, which is not the worst thing in the world, or on Sunday like the Stipler, or you could fulfill the minhag that was the minhag that the Bach records. Fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. I only found this in the Bach. The Bach was a Rav in Poland, different parts of Poland. He was in Krakow and Belz and different places, Lublin. So that was the minhag in Poland, to eat cooked grain on Shabbat Shira. Okay, so whatever your minhag is, yesh al mi lismoch, there is who to rely on. But this is really a fascinating example, a fascinating case study of what happens when you have a minhag that proliferates and crystallizes, that seems to fly in the face of normative halacha, that seems to be in conflict with halacha psuka, halacha mikubelet. On the one hand, you have those who dismiss it and say, it's a minhag ta'ud, minhag shtut, you got to get rid of it. And on the other hand, you have poskim that consider it and are deliberate and say, no, we can't just flippantly dismiss a minhag. We have to treat it with tremendous deference and reverence. Minhag Yisrael Torahi, minhag Yisrael Kedinhu, Hishiru b'minhag avoteichem b'yadeichem. Okay. And you see how they defend such a practice. Absolutely fascinating. Okay. Any questions, comments? Questions, comments? Here, I'll put everyone. You're all now unmuted. Unless you've muted yourselves. Any questions, comments?
Thank you, Rabbi Nadel. It's fascinating to share because always asked these questions over the years and you answered them.
Okay, I guess I've answered all the questions. Wow. Okay, great. So if there are no other questions, I will wish you all a great week. Okay, be well. We'll
see
you
next week. I have a comment if you can hear me.
Yes, please.
I would like to propose that the people, the poskim that tried to defend the minhag, were defending a minhag in their own communities. Today, there are so many different minhagim with different groups. I don't know if you can apply it across the board, because otherwise, obviously, there are contradictions. Some people allow it. Some people think it's against the halacha. So I think it's a matter of a communal or a community decision.
Look, it's a very good point, and I agree with you. All I'll say is that each issue has to be judged individually based on its merits. Each case has to be explored. This case here is not the same as other cases. For instance, here you have poskim that defend the practice. But when I was a rabbi, for instance, in the United States, I had to tell our members of our shul many times that came to Tashlich on Rosh Hashanah afternoon with their family, with their kids, with bags of bread, that is inappropriate. We don't feed birds on Rosh Hashanah. The Mishnah that we saw, we don't feed birds or fish or animals that don't belong to us on Shabbat or Yom Tov. So there, there's no one that defends such a practice. Although actually, there was a minhag to feed birds on Yom Kippur as well, which I didn't mention, which some of the poskim mentioned, and that's an Inyan of exhibiting rachmanis, of being merciful for Hashem's creatures in hopes that Hashem will be merciful to us and will show us rachamim. If we show rachamim and mercy to Hashem's creatures, Hashem will show rachamim to us. So there's an interesting discussion. But I think you're correct that things vary from one community to the next. But I think also we have to bear in mind that each case has to be judged based on its own particular merits. Each minhag has to be judged based on its own particular merits, pro and con. Okay.
Right.
Have a great week.
And today when so many different communities live, side by side, I think we have to be tolerant of the different minhagim. And in the sense that one should not out of hand, condemn people for keeping a minhag, even if it's not your minhag.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, you are absolutely correct. Very important point. We have to be tolerant and show sensitivity 100%. Okay. Yasha koach. Yasha koach. Be well. Have a great week. We'll see you all in Mitzvah Hashem next Wednesday morning.